Okay, so we are up to Perek Yud Aleph, the beginning of the Perek. So, last we spoke, Shaul was anointed by Shmuel in public, and, you know, the nation indeed seemed to accept it. They said, Yehi HaMelech. You know, the melech, the king, should be matzniach, he should be successful. But then, shortly after that, the Navi describes in the last two psukim of Perek Yod that v'gam Shaul halach l'veisel givasa. Shaul went home. And it seems he didn't really take up the mantle of leadership yet. He went home. However, v'yelchu inu hachayel asher naga elokim b'libam. The army, certain men that Hashem touched their hearts, that they were inspired to follow Saul, they went with him. So he took a band of men with him back home. Bnei Bliyal Amru, however, the yokeless one said, what's this guy going to save us? Vayiv Zuhu, and they were mevazahim. They disgraced him. Last pasuk of Perek Yud. And they didn't bring him any gifts. They didn't recognize his position. He was silent. He didn't respond. So it seems, you know, he hasn't been accepted by everyone. There are those who are disgracing him, insulting him, and he's not fully accepted. So that's the Mepharshim connects the idea that he, of the previous pasuk where he goes back home, to this, that he went back home because he wasn't really accepted yet as the king. Pasuk Aleph of Perek Yod Aleph, chapter 11. Ayal Nachash ha'amoni vayichan al yavesh gilad. And Nachash, the Ammonite, went up and camped outside of Yavesh Gilad. Vayomru ko'anshe Yavesh al Nachash, and all the men of Yavesh said to Nachash, Keras lano v'ris v'navdeka, make a covenant with us, and we will serve you. You know, they were agreeing either to, seemingly, you know, to be servants, to perhaps pay taxes to him, and, you know, you'll be our leader, we'll accept you. They felt threatened. The Malbim shares with us over here that the Nachash HaAmoni was upset that Shaul had tried to claim the kingship of Israel. And he was jealous, and he wanted to go to war against them. So that's why he went to Yavesh Gilad. What was Yavesh Gilad? That was Bnei Binyamin. That was from the tribe of Binyamin. Sorry, it wasn't. Yavesh Gilad was from... I think from the Nasha, so now I can't remember for sure, but the Bnei Binyamin at the end of Shoftim, what's that? That Yavesh Gilad was from Binyamin? That they... Okay, let me read the Malbim carefully, because that's actually what I'm reading from. So Yavesh Gilad wasn't originally Binyamin, I don't think. What happened was, this was a place where they killed everyone. They killed all the men from Yavesh Gilad, and the Malbim says they took wives from this place, and this was all after the story of Pelegish Begibah. So they killed the men, and they took the women as wives. And he says, "Mistama, it's logical that some of the men of Binyamin settled there, and because they had killed the men, so and you know, and there was all this plan to be taken." And the you know the daughters were left with it, and they were marrying the daughters. So because they were related to Shaul, that's why he decided to attack them first. Because Saul had taken this, the mantle of kingship. He was jealous. He was upset by this. So he went after Saul's extended family. I have a recollection from when we learned about this that somebody said in some context that Saul himself was somehow involved in that story of the conquering of the other Gilad. I don't remember the exact, reference to that, but I have this, I think there's a metric maybe that connects it to that. Because there's this whole question about when that actually occurred. When did the story of Pelegus the Giva occur? There are those who say that it happened at the very, even though the chapter about it appears at the end of Sophim, so many say that it happened actually at the beginning of Sophim when they first entered the land of Israel. But others understand that it happened at the end, and this idea of having Saul having a connection to it, that would be taking the side that it happened at the end. I don't remember the exact reference that we had connecting Saul to that story. So that was that's the Mabon's approach over here. Let's read a couple more psukim. Pasuk Beis Vayomer Aleihem Nachash HaAmoni. And Nachash the Ammonite said to them, "Bezos echros lachem. I'll cut a covenant. I'll make a covenant with you in the following way. Dinikar lachem kol ein yamin. If you poke out all of your right eye, everybody will poke out his right eye. V'samtio cherpa al kol Yisrael, and it will be this great insult on all of Israel." That's going to be the covenant. If you don't want to be destroyed, you have to each give up your eye. That's the simple understanding of the pasuk. There is a medrash quoted by Rashi and the Radak that Nachash Amoni was angry at what it says in the Torah, "Lo yavo Amoni b'kal Hashem." That Amoni cannot marry into, even if he converts, cannot marry into the Jewish people. I think the Yerushalmi actually understands that to mean that he can't convert at all, although I don't think that's how we pass him, but even if an Ammonite converts, he can't marry, his descendants can't marry into Israel. And Nachash Amoni didn't like this. So he said, "I'm going to, according to Rashi, burn the whole Torah. According to Radak, I'm going to poke out that part of the Torah. I'm going to cut that out. And that's the Nikar Lachem. I'm going to poke out Kol Ein Yamin, your right Yamin, the Torah is called." Yeah, the Radak says it. The Radak says, yeah, that's it. Hey, Sefer Torah, Shu'ein Yeminchen, your right eye, whatever that means. It's our right, it's our right hand. It's our, so he wanted to poke that out of the Torah. That's a midrashic interpretation. Okay. Whatever it is, Vayomru Elam Zikne Yavish, and the man of Yavish said to him, "Heref Lanu Shivas Yamin. Leave off of us for 7 days. Give us 7 days. V'nishlecha malachim b'chol gevul Yisrael. And let us send messengers around all the borders of Israel. V'mein Moshiach osanu v'yatsanu elach. If no one comes to save us, so then we will come out to you." Sounds like a very, very strange request and deal. Like, you want to destroy us? Just give us 7 days so we can call on someone to, to save us. So what were they saying? So the Mefarshim tell us, so that David explains that the whole intent of Nachash Amoni was, "I'm going to do this to you, and it's going to be an insult to all of Israel because they're going to let it happen. They're going to stand by and let it happen. They're not going to be able to stop it." That was how he intended to insult the Jewish people. So that so they said, "Okay, if that's what you want to do, well, if you just do it without anybody knowing about it, so then it won't be an insult to, it won't demonstrate the weakness of the Jewish people. It won't disgrace the nation. as opposed to if they know about it, and you still, you show your power, and despite them trying to save us, or at least knowing about it, you're still able to execute this terrible thing against us, so then you'll have really disgraced the Jewish people, and you'll have accomplished your goal. So at least let us, let people know about this, if you would like to, if your whole purpose is to demonstrate your might and to disgrace and insult the nation. And Nachash Amoni says, okay, and they proceed to send messengers to call for a rescue. The Kuyakar has a bit of a different approach than the Malbim. Again, the Malbim said that the reason why Nachash Amoni came was because he was upset at Shaul for taking the kingship. Now this, what the Kuyakar says actually doesn't necessarily contradict it, that it could just add to it. The Kuyakar says, Levi Omer, he says, my heart tells me, which means he doesn't have a proof to this, but this is what his heart tells him, that the Anshei Yavei Shilad, who were attacked here, they were the B'nai B'li'al referred to at the end of the last chapter. They were the ones who said, who were Mevaze Shaul. They were the ones who said, how is this guy going to save us? We don't accept him as king. That was the Anshei Yavei Shilad. And therefore, well, first of all, he tries to prove it. He says the proof is that they first try to cut a deal that's to their liking with Nachash Amoni before calling for help from Shaul. If he says if they indeed had accepted Shaul, so that would have been their first response, was to go, and send messengers to Shaul. The fact that they first try to make a deal with Nachash Amoni implies that they didn't really see Shaul as their leader. Okay, I think there's questions we can ask on that proof. Who says that they were able to send messengers? It seems they were only able to send messengers because he allowed them to. So, but that's his proof. But his point is that because they did not accept Shaul, they were being punished now, that this terrible fate was going to come upon them. And had they not reached out to Shaul, maybe as a reparation of what they had done, so indeed they would have all, had to give up their eyes, their eyes. So this was a punishment to them for not accepting Shaul from Hashem. He sent Nachash Amoni on them. And not only that, but we're going to see that Shaul is going to rise to the challenge. Shaul is going to defeat Nachash Amoni. And this will be the vehicle through which Shaul will be accepted by all as the king. Because he's going to show, he's going to be victorious, and then they're going to accept him. So the Kuyakar adds that not only were they, did they not accept him at first, and this was brought as a punishment, but also Hashem arranged it, they would actually be the vehicle through which everyone would accept Shaul as king. So let's see how that plays out. So Pasuk Dalid, Vayavo Hamalochim Givat Shaul, and these messengers came to Givat Shaul, Vayidabru Hadivarim Ba'aznei Ha'am, and they spoke the words in the ears of the nation, Vayisu Chol Ha'amis Kolam Vayisku, and all of the nation raised up their voices and they cried. Vine Shaul Ba Acharei Habakar Min HaSadeh, and behold, Shaul was coming behind the cattle from the field. And we'll talk about that in a second. Vayomer Shaul, Ma la'am ki yizku, why is the nation crying? Vayisapru lo es divrei anshei Yavei Shilad, and they told him over the words of the men of Yavish. So it says that Shaul was coming acharei habakar min asadeh. He was coming after the cattle from the field. So what does that mean? So it sort of depends how we understand why Shaul came home in the first place. We mentioned previously Shaul came home, so I mentioned some of the Farshim say because he wasn't really accepted as king. So he went back to, you know, working on the farm for his father. So here Shaul is, he's not king, he's just working on the farm, and he's coming, Acharei HaBakar, he's coming behind the cattle, and that's what the Pasuk is trying to tell us, that he was not leading the people at this point. That's how Mitzvah Sovig and the Radak learn. The Malbim seems to learn that no, he was already established as the king. Remember, he brought a bunch of men back with him, and indeed, he's no longer a simple cattle herder. And why does it say that he was coming behind the cattle? Not because he was herding the cattle, it was B'mikra. He happened to be coming behind the cattle, and that's going to be significant for what happens now in the next pasuk. Because what happens? Matitzlach Ruach Elokim al Shaul. And a spirit of Hashem passed over Shaul. B'shamo es ha-devarim ha-ile. When he heard these words, Vayichar apo me'od, and he became very angry. So whenever we see Ruach Elokim, spirit of Hashem, so sometimes it's understood to mean like a Ruach HaKodesh, a divine inspiration of prophecy, but sometimes it means a spirit of strength. And here it refers to a spirit of strength, perhaps that's related to Elokim. Elokim is the term for power, for power in the world. When we talk about Hashem being Elokeha Elokim, it means he's the source of all power. So Ruach Elokim, a spirit of power passed over Shaul, a spirit of strength. And he was very, very angry about what was going on. This would be the significance that he was following behind some cattle, because it's telling us that now there was a bull right there. He took the Semed Bakar, I think it's like the yoke or the attaching piece, I don't know what it's called, but some piece that attaches the yoke two animals together. How do they translate it? In verse 7.
He took a pair of oxen.
Oh. Okay, so it wasn't a piece. I thought sometimes salmon buckler means some kind of piece, but let's see what the Parshim say. Why do I think that? Yeah, okay. So indeed, Mitzvah Tzion says zug, a pair, because they usually go attached. Right. Semed comes from the word attached, but here he's saying it doesn't refer to the attachment, but rather to it's just a way of referencing two bulls.
So it really
because they
means
are attached.
An attached pair.
Right. I guess so. So he took a pair of oxen, vayinat cheyu, and he cut them into pieces. Vayishalach b'chol d'bul Yisrael b'yad hamalachim leimar, and he sent them through all of the borders of Israel with messengers saying, Asher einenu yotzei acharei Shaul ve'achar Shmuel, whoever doesn't go out, does not follow after Shaul and after Shmuel, ko ye'osel is karo. This is what's going to be done to his cattle. Vayipol pachad Hashem ala'am, and the fear of Hashem fell upon the people, not the fear of Shaul, but the fear of Hashem. Vayetzu ki'ish echad, and they went out like one man. So I think this pasuk is really a loaded pasuk. The first thing that strikes me is just the imagery of the and I don't think I didn't see this in the Mepharshim, but the imagery of the cut up ox being sent all over the land by messengers, right? What does that remind us of? Exactly, the Pilegis to give us. I didn't see anyone make mention. This just struck me now, but they bring something down. Okay, what do they say? Yeah, what did he say? Okay, he doesn't have anything more to add. Okay.
Here's something.
Okay.
It says Shaul's intention was different in kind from that of the Levite and his wife's concubine's body into 12 pieces. The Levite meant to shock, Shaul meant to inspire.
Okay. He's also threatening, but, right, he's saying, you know, whoever doesn't come out, so, Koye Yosel Rivkaro, this is what's going to happen to your cattle.
I was wondering if that was a threat or if that was an admonition. In other words, if you don't stand together, these Anshei Belial are going to parasitize all of you individually.
You mean what's it called? The Nachas Hamoni is going to come after everyone.
Right. Individually.
Uh-huh.
And individually you won't be able to stand
against
them.
You're not saying I'm going to do it. You're saying this is what's going to happen to you.
If you don't stand united. I'm just asking. What? Referring to... Right. Animals to you.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. Okay, no, I think it's a good suggestion. Yeah, I'm just wondering if there's some connection to Yahweh's Gilad again, that, cause that was the aftermath, right, as we said, of the story of Yeragish Begiva.
Yeah, but even that message is ambiguous. Right? Does it mean that this is going to happen to you directly, because I'm going to do it to you? Obviously, the Levite wasn't saying that. He was just a little tiny little Levite.
Right.
He wasn't going to do that.
Yeah, no, he for sure wasn't threatening.
He was trying to inspire.
Right, no, that's true.
He was not trying to threaten.
Who?
Right, the Levite.
He was trying to shock, they said, right? No, he was trying to...
Yeah,
to say,
shock,
this
but
is
to inspire.
Right, this is, a, or to,
right, this
right,
is what's
going to
happen to your women.
Right, or, right, or like we can't let something like this pass. We have to stand up for you know against such actions.
Law and order.
Right. Yeah. So okay. So there's interesting imagery here. The other idea that we can talk about in this pasuk is more of a halachic question of tzar balei chayim. Right, of what permitted, what is one allowed to, you know, to do to an animal, where's the line of tzar balei chayim? So in general, you know, we have a halacha that if it's for human need, so then it's acceptable to put an animal through some amount of pain. You know, there's limitations on this, and you have to define what's considered need. Dog fighting, you know, would not be a human need. But, you know, then, you know, it's different posts, you know, experimentation maybe, different opinion. But here we have Shaul, he is, right, certainly Shita, you're allowed to slaughter an animal. But here we have that Shaul is chopping up some, some animals, seemingly they were alive a moment ago, he was walking behind them. And then he decides to, and he's threatening to do this to other people, so it would, you'd have to, other people's oxen, so there's what to discuss about Tzar Balei Chayim here. It would seem that you could bring at least another, if you recall when we talked about Pilagish Begiva, by that story, we talked about Bizoy Hamet, we talked about disgracing a dead body. There were poskim, you know, Rav Moshe Feinstein, who brought a proof from that story that it would be acceptable for a greater purpose. I think in that context he was being asked about using a cadaver for a demonstration against autopsy in Israel. That's what Rav Moshe was asked about, and he wanted to bring a proof from the story of Pilagish Begiva that it would be acceptable to do that, to have some level of Bizoy Hamet, of disgracing a dead body for a greater purpose. So maybe we can do a similar thing here, and again, bring a proof from Shaul that, you know, again, we said, like, no, I mean, we know this, that Tzar Balei Chayim is permitted for a greater, for human purpose, for human need, and this would seemingly be an example of that.
If I could ask a question.
Yeah.
Does Tzar Balei Chayim, would that infringe if the animal is slaughtered according to Shechita?
No, that's one of the proofs that, you know, that it's acceptable, somewhat. We're allowed to slaughter an animal. Now, we do try to do it in a very, you know, most painless way that, you know, maybe nowadays they have more painless ways, it's like injections or I don't know, but according to the Torah, at least what was, you know, available in those times was a very quick slaughter.
Right, but I think I'm asking a different question. Would there have been a question about what Shaul had done?
I mean, once it was dead, and
suppose he had slaughtered them.
Right.
According to Shapita,
right.
Then he divides
right.
the pieces.
Yeah.
Is there a question then?
I don't think so. We do it all the time in the butcher shop. I don't know how he did it. Right? We don't know how he did it. It's not clear.
Well, we were going to assume he's not going to do it if I just want
to know. No, because he's not doing this to eat it.
What?
Right. He doesn't seem that this...
He knew the law.
No, I'm saying it doesn't seem that... It doesn't seem like he's sending this meat around so people will eat it, you know? We don't know that he's shechting it first. That's the point. And maybe he just cut this animal right up into pieces. But you're right. Right, it doesn't. Right, it doesn't. But it's a good point that, you know, he doesn't need. They're not witnessing him cut it up, right? So he's not going to do it in any like inhumane way to try to get a message across. They're not going to see it anyways. Maybe if he had like a video that he could put on YouTube and say, you know, if you don't listen, this is what's going to happen to you, so then there would be a purpose of doing it in a like. But you're right. If they're not going to see it anyways, then maybe he would first kill the animal in a very humane way and then cut into pieces. I don't know. Okay. And again, as I pointed out, by Yipol Pachad Hashem Ala'am, it says that the Pachad of Hashem, the fear of Hashem settled on the people because they recognized at this point that he was indeed the chosen one of Hashem through this action. He seemed to show his strength. It could be also, again, you know, it says that a spirit of strength settled upon him. It could be that he did do this in some miraculously strong way of just, you know, cutting it up like that. I don't know. It's not clear. But it does, this pasuk is preceded by the idea that the spirit of strength settled upon him, and then he takes these two oxen and he cuts them into pieces and he sends it off, and then they say, oh, this must be the one chosen by Hashem. So again, you know, that would seem to imply that maybe he did just, chop it up, you know, in a show of great strength. So this brought the people together, Vayetzu Ki'ish Echad, and they went out as one man. Ah, so one more important point is the comment of the Malbim over here. The Malbim says that Shaul was sending a message, and this I think is basically what you were referencing before. Well, not exactly, but similar. He was saying that that this animal could represent the people as a whole, and just as you know, if it that this animal cannot have life unless all of its limbs are attached to each other, so too the Jewish people as a whole can only have life if all the limbs are attached, if everyone's unified. And that was the message that Saul was sending to the people. Like if we're separated, if our different parts are separate, then we can't have life. We need to unite in order for the Jewish people to survive. And indeed, the message came across, and that's why the pasuk concludes, "Vayetzu ki'ish echad," and they went out as one man. They did indeed unify into one cohesive whole. "Vayifkadem bivazek," and he counted them in bazek. "Vayiyu bnei Yisrael shlosh meos elef," and the bnei Yisrael were 300,000. The Ish Yehuda, Shloshim Aleph, and from Yehuda there were 30,000. I'm not sure why we are already breaking up the Jewish people into Israel and Yehuda. You know, we'll see this start to play itself out already soon. But so it's just interesting that right now we are sort of separating the Jewish people into these two parts. You know, I suppose that would somewhat imply that, you know, there was this, you know, even though they were uniting now, but there was some separation already from the beginning between Yehuda and the rest of the Jewish nation. So he counted them in Bozek. So Bozek is an interesting word. It could refer to a place called Bozek. Rashi brings a couple of other pshatim. Rashi says, based on the Gemara, that it refers to shards of earthenware, that they everybody submitted a piece of earthenware. Others also bring an idea that it refers to stone. But the idea being that we do not count Jewish people directly, rather, just like we did in last week's parsha and Kisisa, that Kisisa's Bnei Yisrael, when you count Bnei Yisrael, so you count them with Machatis HaShekel, with a half shekel. So to here, they would count them with pieces of Peres, which carries with it two ideas, right? One is that we don't count directly. We don't want to single out individuals. If you single out individuals, that sort of calls Hashem's attention down on that person individually, and they can lose the merits of being part of the Klal. While if you count people, you know, not individuals, but rather, you know, half shekels, or we count shards or stones, so we're not counting people directly. We're not calling attention to each individual person. And secondly, just like we say about the machas with a shekel, that it was a half shekel. So here we can say it was shards, it was pieces, because again, this idea that we, you know, each person on his own is not whole. It's only when you combine the people together that we become a whole. And so that's the way to count the Jewish people. We will see later, you know, the Gemara is going to discuss that David HaMelech did not do this, and the results were not good. But Shaul did it. Shaul counted them through counting stones or counting shards of Charet. Vayomru v'amalochim haboyim. And they said to the messengers who came, Kosomrun leish Yavesh Gilad, so you should tell the men of Yavesh Gilad, Machar tielochem teshua b'chom ha'shamesh, tomorrow you will have salvation in the heat of the sun, the heat of the day. Vayavoa ha'malochim, and these messengers came, Vayagidu v'anshe Yavesh, and they told the men of Yavesh, Vayismachu, and the people of Yavesh rejoiced in the news that salvation was on its way. Vayomer anshe Yavesh, and the anshe Yavesh told Nachash Ha'amoni, Machar neitze aleichem, tomorrow we're going to come out to you. Vatisem lanu kichol hatov ve'einechem, and you can do to us whatever is good in your eyes. So they basically tricked him. They said, oh, we're going to come tomorrow. We're yours. There's no help coming. You know, we've given up. We're going to come out to you tomorrow, and you can do as you see fit with us. Vayhi b'macharach, and it was the next day. Vayasem Shaul es ha'am shlosh ha'rashim, and Shaul arranged the nation into three sections, three heads. Vayavo b'socha machaneh b'ashmores haboker, and they came into the camp at Ashmores haboker, which is at daybreak. It's the end of the Radak, right? The Radak tells us that there's three Ashmores, three Mishmaros, three periods of guarding in the night. I think there's a reference to both angels, the Malachim, and maybe also in the Beis HaMikdash. I think they had three guards. But the night is divided up, right? And maybe a typical encampment also would have three periods of guarding, three shifts. And it was Be'ashmores HaBoker, which is to the last guard, and that's when they attacked. Vayakos Amon at Chomayom, and they struck at Amon until the heat of the day, until noon. Vayhiya Nisharim, and there were some that were left from Amon, Vayafutsu, and they scattered. Yeah, and they scattered the Lo Nisharu Vam Shnayim Yachad, and it didn't remain among Amon, not even two together. So the unity of the Jewish people helped to completely disperse Amon, so that not even two people remained together. Everyone was fleeing. Anybody that remained was fleeing on their own. Nayomer Ha'am El Shmuel. And the nation said to Shmuel, Mi ha'omer sho'o yimlo chaleinu t'nu ha'anashim unimisein. Whoever says sho'o will rule over us, meaning whoever questioned that, whoever, right, sho'o was just victorious, they said, wow, sho'o is the king. Whoever questioned sho'o's right to the kingship, give him to us, and we will kill them for challenging Saul's kingship. Vayomer Shaul, and Shaul said, Lo yumas ish vayom hazeh, no man should die on this day. Ki hayom asa Hashem teshuva b'Yisrael, because today Hashem has done a great salvation for the people of Israel. So I didn't see the Kliyakar on this pasuk, but I wonder, you know, because the Kliyakar said that the people who had been mevazim, they had disgraced them, were the people of this town, of this place, Yavesh Gilad. So it would be interesting that right now we have people on Saul's army saying, whoever challenged Saul, we should kill them. So they would basically be saying, the people that we just saved, that we just came here to save, let's kill them, because they challenged Saul's army. And Saul is right. And Saul says, no. Now, we spoke last week, you know, at some length, about this pasuk, because seemingly these people were married the Malchus. They rebelled against the king, which a person who's married the Malchus is Chayav Misa. He deserves to be killed. So he pointed out that the Rambam actually says that it's Rishut. The king is allowed to have the person killed, but doesn't have to. And so opted not to have them killed. Now the Gemara, though, seems to see this as a claim against Saul. The Gemara says that Shaul basically, you know, when this was the beginning of the end for Shaul, it says, why was Shaul punished? Rashi says that he was put into a situation where he would lose his kingship. But there's the Gemara is telling us that, and the Gemara says, because he didn't stand up for his honor over here. And he said, I think it actually refers back to the other psukim from the end of the last chapter where they were mevazeh him, they disgraced him and he was silent. And again here the people are saying, let's kill them, they're married with Malchus. And he says, no, don't kill them. So the Gemara seems to have some taina on Shaul for letting this go. We said, you know, the Marsha, that a king has to stand up for his honor, he can't be mochel on his kavod. So these are some of the issues at play here. Okay, Pasuk Yadalad. Vayomer Shmuel El Ha'am. And Shmuel said to the nation, Rechu v'nelcha ha-gyogal, u'nechadesh sham ha-melucha. Let go up to Gilgal, and we will renew the Malchus once again. So even though we just did this in the last chapter, right? In the last chapter, the nation gathered. Where was that last time? I think it was in Mitzvah. They gathered in Mitzvah, and over there they drew lots and they anointed Shaul. But as we said, not everyone accepted him. So even though there was already, right, this is the third time Saul is going to be appointed as king, right? First, Shmuel did it in private. Then Shmuel was concerned, you know, that people were going to accept what happened in private. He wanted to do it in public with Urim and Thummim and with Lot. So he did it again. But not everyone accepted him even then. So now that Saul has achieved victory, he's shown his might, he's shown he's deserving of king, of being king. So now Shmuel is ready to re-anoint Saul in front of everyone. And that's what happens. He says, let's go to Gilgal, and we will renew the kingship over there. Gilgal, by the way, is a go-to place for these types of events. Radak explains because it was a holy place. It was the place where the Ohel Moed, where the Mishkan was, when they first entered Eretz Yisrael. Even though it wasn't there now, it was there when they first came. So that's where they go. And all the nation went to Gilgal. Vayamlichu sham et Shaul with Ne'ashem by Gilgal, and they anointed Shaul. They crowned him in Gilgal. Vayizbichu sham zevach and shlamim with Ne'ashem, and there they brought karbanos shlamim before Hashem. Vayismach sham Shaul v'chol anshei Yisrael am ne'od. And there, Shaul and all the men of Israel rejoiced greatly. With Ne'ashem, it says, they did it before Hashem. The Sadeh tells us, reminds us, it says in a number of places, that the Shechina is Shoreh. The Shechina comes when there is a Makom Sherov Tzibur Ne'asafim, a place where the majority of the congregation, where there's a lot of people gathered, so the Shechina is present. They brought karbanos, and they rejoiced over Shaul's kingship. Shaul and all of the Jewish people. Okay. Thanks.